This is Rackabix After Hours.
Welcome. This is round two for us. If you're new here, this is just a little podcast conversation between three mates. We've just bailed out of work, walked about 5 metres and fallen into the pub. We're all kind of people in the generally music kind of technology industry. I'm joined today by the lovely Pete and Andy. Say hi, friends.
Hello.
Hi.
A little bit thin on the ground from me, I know, in terms of actually finding some topics for the chatting today. But Pete's got some pretty juicy looking ones lined up for us. So where do we want to start?
Well, how's your week been, guys?
Oh, man. Really boring. I've been digging into After Effects, Adobe After Effects. That's quite a new one for me. A little bit of the animation type thing. It's still really basic. But all the entry-level tutorials on Adobe's website. Actually really fun. I'm enjoying it.
So I believe you were saying you were doing some particle stuff.
Yeah, I did. I did my first smokes simulation the other day. It was a big moment for me. We just did the thing. Get a still image. It was like a house with a chimney. Put a little kind of emittery thing like the chimney. Just had a little bit of smoke coming. So a static image, but a bit of smoke going. It was really satisfying. It was completely pointless for what I was actually doing for the project, but it was really great to learn that kind of thing.
Always great to onboard some new skills.
Absolutely, and new kind of creative tools. So I've been using Logic for ages, but I want to add to the arsenal, as it were.
Fair enough.
That's about it for me. What about you guys?
I've been getting to all the vagaries of how you publish podcasts. In coordination with what we're doing here, that's right. Been interesting.
Bit of an ordeal, it sounds like.
I think it's one of those things that once you've got everything set up and you're on, you know, you're going, it's all good. It's just the initial setup, get everything sort of sorted out. It's early days.
We'll see how it goes. Is the first one, well, at the moment, for whatever time this is for us, we're just waiting for the first one to kind of be approved and then it'll be
first
about?
First one's published. But we're waiting for iTunes approval. I haven't submitted it to any other distribution channels as yet. I thought we'd get the iTunes one out of the way and then go from there.
So, hello, iTunes.
Yeah, as I say, I expect to get a notification once they've given it the okay. So, I don't know quite the extent of the vetting, but I would imagine that they're going to make sure that
we love Apple.
That we're complying
one
with
one of the keywords that gets you there sooner.
Their T's and C's and so forth, but I would hope to think that's going to be forthcoming relatively shortly, but we shall see.
Sounds good. Andy, anything exciting?
Oh, nothing exciting. I've just been getting my head around the general day-to-day admin of running a business.
Oh, joy.
And everything like that. So on the phones.
The less glamorous side.
Oh, the less glamorous side, yeah. So what was the particular highlight? I would say waiting on hold with insurance companies.
Amazing.
That was a good one.
Do you total up your hold time or anything while you're having those conversations?
Oh, no, but I'm one of those horrible people that forget, you know, who I'm speaking to going through. It's like, oh, yeah, I was referred to you by someone.
Someone on the call, please help me. Yeah. They didn't.
And even worse, I'm at the studio at the time, and there's like a guitar laying down, and obviously I'm being put on hold for however long, and I'm just like kind of twiddling away, and then all of a sudden the phone comes back just as I'm finished, and I'm like, oh, this is really not the vibe I'm kind of going for. So yeah, that's basically been it. Had a couple of sessions doing some fun stuff as well in between. So it's, you know, not a total loss. It's all good.
Nice one.
Cool. So what's the game plan? What are we talking about?
Right, so haven't been much that I've seen in the way of releases or announcements, but the one thing that did caught my eye, because it's a product that I've enjoyed in the past, was the release of Nexus 3.
Mm. Never used it. I know nothing about it. Fill me in.
Okay, so I've had Nexus 2 for quite a time. I believe it's currently, I would like to say, about 7 years old, so there's been quite a gap between version 2 and this release of version 3. They seem to have definitely gone for a complete redesign. Now, let me start from Nexus is It's a sort of soft synth type of thing, but it's also sort of a big library of pre-derived or pre-created soundscapes. Some of them are multiple layered.
Okay.
It's the sort of tool that if you're just wanting to do song composition or songwriting, or you want to do something really quite quickly, it's just a big arsenal of sounds and things that you can employ quickly. It's the antithesis of someone who wants to be a sound designer. They've done all the sound design for you.
Oh, gotcha. So someone who really wants to kind of capture a mood super easily without having to, you know, kind of get too into the nitty-gritty, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you can just plow through the various libraries, and there's masses of expansions that you can get for it. As I say, it plays quite well as a soft synth. It's got an arpeggiator. There's a lot of variety that you can import or add to the actual sound set. So there's a lot of adjustments. They have a certain amount of virtual modeling in the respect that there's filters and effects, and you can remove and or increase them and do quite a lot. So you can make the sounds and the soundscapes and the various sound packs your own. And I have to admit that I have used Nexus 2 extensively in the past. I mean, I have produced some tracks which are almost exclusively, apart from the percussion side, all done on this, which is a bit ironic considering
the amount of synths are in your studio.
Yes, yeah. But it, as I say, it's one of those two. If you want something, a real fast workflow, it's the sort of thing that you can just ripple through. It's the learning curve. There isn't much of a learning curve to it. Although it looks like in version 3 they really have tried to expand it. The library, they've got a brand new library, plus it supports all the old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The GUI has been modified quite dramatically. It looks quite different. If you haven't seen Nexus 2, it looks aesthetically, they've kind of tried to create something that could almost be a desktop unit if it was real, but it's
okay.
in graphical format. So when you see it, it looks like an instrument.
Mm.
And this time round, they've gone for a more conventional graphic user interface.
I'm looking at a piano roll in there.
Yeah, it's much more conventional looking. And it looks like there's far more features in the new product. Far more flexibility in the new product, I'd like to say.
Is it a standalone or is it a plug-in?
I would imagine going by the original, you could certainly run it as a standalone, or you could run it in the plug-in. Plug-in is generally the way I would use it.
It's
compatible. So if we take the new one, it talks about the compatibility. So we have a list here. So basically all the contenders all the way through Ableton Live, Logic Pro X, Sonar, Reaper, Pro Tools.
Forgot Acid Pro existed.
Yes, I know. FL Studio.
Digital Performer.
Most importantly,
yeah, Traction. I'm not familiar with that particular one.
I know it exists. That's all I've got.
Renoise, again, not one on Acid.
Everything anybody could possibly ever want.
Yeah, so it's fully compatible. And
oh, wait, it runs in NI Machina. That's cool.
Oh, is it NKS?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's pretty cool.
For anyone that doesn't know, NKS is a really cool... What would you say?
Not a protocol, but a kind of standard for auto mapping with controllers. That's my understanding
exactly.
of it.
No, that's how I'd say it. So, like, if you own one of the complete controllers, like the S series or the A series, it's automatically mapped. I know that's one thing that I generally really loathe and why I really
MIDI mapping stuff
I really
manually.
Subscribe to the Native Instruments side of things when it comes to the kind of controller keyboards, is because all of the half a day spent trying to map down everything is just taken completely out.
That's why I haven't really done much of that kind of stuff myself, is because I just can't be bothered to remember how to do the whole MIDI learn thing.
No, I know. It's like with certain ones you kind of come across and it's like, oh, that's already set up for you. And it's like, is it quite like NKS? I don't know.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
So it's built out of a kind of... I mean, there are samples in there. There's also synthetic stuff. There is quite a variety, but just the stats on... 2,799 sound presets divided into 22 categories. 2,238 multi-samples.
Oh, cool.
God.
Come to 18 gigabytes worth, uncompressed. 211 impulse responses.
Okay, well, could be reverbs, could be lots of stuff in that.
Yeah, 119 arpeggiator presets, 95 effect presets, and 52 trancegate presets. I mean, it is very dance and electronic music orientated. And I mean, there are a lot of producers who really either haven't got the budget or the inclination to sit there and, you know, spend hours doing sound design.
Yeah, it's like one of the ones that I came across, it sounds like in a relatively similar vein rather, is Arcade. Have you guys come across that? It's littered with my YouTube, you know, advertisements and stuff like that that always come up, and it sounds like it's in a similar vein to that, but a little bit more stripped out. I know that one that I've used in the past, it's the vocal one that they do. And that will just basically...
It's just called Vocal Synth, isn't it?
It may well be. I'll have to fact check. but yes, that seems like it's in a very similar vein. And that sort of stuff is brilliant. Like when you kind of get home and you're just kind of having a tinker and it's like, right, these are this kind of lays the foundation for the track that I'm going to kind of... by the end of it. Or better yet, it's just like adding extra kind of elements and layers to different tracks. So it sounds very cool.
Yeah. Opposite of my kind of workflow. I enjoy sound design more than composing. So.
Yeah. I just like prattling about.
No, I know exactly what you mean. And there's nothing better than, you know, developing something from the ground up. It's got that element of ownership.
Oh, yeah.
You produce something particularly nice. But as I say,
with the expense of speed and efficiency.
Yeah. I find that certainly... a lot of the colleagues I work with who are involved in the sort of various dance genres, it's all about productivity. Obviously, there's a level of quality that they're trying to achieve. But the same extent, they really have to start churning this stuff out. The revenues generated from that type of thing are pretty minimal, as it is anyway. And, you know, if they're at a certain level of production, they've got to produce possibly, I don't know, one or two tracks a month.
Mm. I mean, there's no waiting a couple of years between albums for those guys, right?
Well, I'm on like one track every 23 years, I think. So
yeah, you can get bogged down, and I think it's something that it's a habit forming thing, isn't it? I think there is a perennial problem, and I would imagine there's tens of thousands of people who enjoy various aspects of music production, but get into that problematic area where they've got lots of good ideas, but really finish anything, and that's really the art form.
I suffer from that myself. There are at least, you know, however many projects on my laptop that are just kind of called something, something, something. I think one of the ones was when I was watching Stranger Things, I think when Series 2 came out.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of clap your hands together, start rolling, and say, right, yeah.
It's 80s synthy time.
It's 80s synth time. Here we go. It's mad arpeggiators, pads, everything like that. And then I kind of got through maybe about 8 bars, and I was just like... Now we're done. This is as far as it's going.
What's next on the docket, sir?
Right. Nothing much in the respect of releases, so I haven't seen any particular announcements. Nothing that caught my eye anyway. I'm sure there are. There's always something.
But I think at the minute it's the build-up to NAMM.
January sometime? Is it February?
I want to say it's like the 20th of January that NAMM kind of... That sounds about right.
Mm.
That it all starts kicking off. And I imagine everything up till now is kind of being kept under close wraps.
Yeah, I can imagine a lot of vendors are keeping their powder dry for that. For those sort of... Or they'll start... Do they normally release or make their announcements just prior to the show?
Yeah, it's usually just prior, which is really irritating, I find, because it's like you get to that kind of point where you're all kind of geared up for NAMM, and then a week before, everyone tells you what you're going to do, and then it's like, well, why are we doing the show? I mean, I understand the kind of industry aspects of it 100%, but it's like, surely you'd kind of wait. It's not like you kind of get to E3, the big games one.
And it's all surprises.
It's all surprises and everything like that, and then you get to that point where it's like, you know, imagine if they announced whatever big game a week before E3. You just completely lose the hype of Yeah. Everything, I guess.
I would imagine that's because invariably the games manufacturers are selling directly to the public in a lot of cases, aren't they? There's a lot of direct sales online, whereas NARM is, you know, it's all about hardware, so they've got to sell it to the retailers.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And that and it's, you know, to a degree, it's a B2B show.
Yeah.
Rather than sort of to the public generally. I'm sure that, I mean, I think they
have one day that's open, like, for the public, for everyone to come down. The, like, because I think it's a 3-day show. But the first 2 days are strictly business to business.
Yeah, I would imagine that's
it. And then the last day they open up.
Everyone's trying to get their sales in, or everyone's trying to get their purchases in while, certain, you know, especially with the vendors where the stock might be limited.
Yeah, for sure. I like the idea of, as well, I think Rolly was maybe one of them, of like the ones that don't go to NAMM. Teenage Engineering, pardon me. I think Teenage Engineering parked outside of NAMM.
Yeah,
They didn't get like a stall.
It's pretty funny.
They parked outside and everyone came out to see him.
That would, because they were definitely showing off the OPZ at that point.
Was it the OPZ?
I think that was before it was actually released. It was really final at that point. Because I remember sort of the year before, and they showed it off so early, and there were about 3 videos online before that particular NAMM where they parked up, and nobody knew what it was.
Yeah.
Even though they'd showed it off loads, because they're like, oh yeah, you can control visuals. That was it. It's just like, oh, okay, right. Cool. It's this strange grey slab that's like, there's visuals involved, and it's got some kind of nebulous synth engine in it, and now we know what it is, but yeah. I did like that parking up outside.
I think it's kind of funny. You know, that ends up becoming more of the bigger news, I find, compared to the rest of it. It's like, absolutely. Right, who are the underdogs? You know what I mean? Teenage Engineering must have done the OP1 long before they did that.
Oh, it's 7, 8, maybe even 9 years old, that
really?
Thing. It's really old. You guys carry on. I'm going to do a mobile fact check as we go, because I know it's been out a while.
The thing I was going to ask, if they rocked up outside, was that with the permission of the show, the people running the show, or was it a bit of an off-the-cuff thing? Do you think it was...
I'm imagining it's a bit of both.
But deliberately set up to look subversive when it really isn't, because they most probably have got permission and...
That's it, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It just depends. You know, I mean, the cynic in me wants to say that it's all a big kind of ploy to kind of help promote one company or another or something like that. The other part of me likes to think that you can just turn up to a parking lot, open your garage, open your boot rather, and there's the stuff and everyone comes down. It'd be a really nice kind of thing to think.
So where is it? It's Anaheim, California, isn't it?
Anaheim, California, which I think is still like 40 minutes away from like central LA, which I never realized how big these places are. Like LA is huge.
Well, it's just one big suburb, isn't it?
That's
massive.
Yeah, so OP1 was after 2011 NAMM.
Really?
Yeah, so it's...
That's quite some time
that's
ago.
That's ancient. That's, eight
and
coming
it still
up on,
feels so current. Do you know, it still feels like a new product. Like,
well, they have just done the revamp, haven't they? So I don't know.
Nothing changed, though. It was just a display. That's the reason it was unavailable and then jumped up in, what are we talking, £200-300, because they couldn't get the old OLED. So they had to find a new manufacturer, change a few bits. And, I mean, there's been software updates continuously, but it's no different from the old one.
At least you can get a hold of them now, though.
Yeah.
Because it used to be that you would find them, there was a really dry spell with the OP1, if I remember rightly, and you just could not get a hold of them. And you'd end up seeing them on eBay for literally probably what they retail now at, if not more.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because there was a bit of controversy around that, because Teenage Engineering announced like, oh yeah, we're going to have to stop production. It's going to be a while. And at that point, it was when you could get them, it was £800-900, I think.
Yeah, right.
And then they said that, and then a bit later, people were chucking OP1s on eBay, Reverb, whatever, going for like 11, 12. I think there was one about £1,400, because like, oh, they're never going to make it again. And then Teenage Engineering actually did a press release thing saying, under no circumstances should anybody pay £1,200 for an OP1. This price is ridiculous. Just be patient. We're bringing them back.
Yeah.
At £1,200 a few months later. So, yeah, that was uncool.
Yeah.
But I understand how and why it can happen.
Oh, yeah. It's like when you end up kind of looking into it, you completely get it.
But I'm just happy again that we can get a hold of them now.
Yeah, a colleague of ours is, I think he financed one recently, and he's got some good ears and a good voice for, well, not voice, but, you know, musical voice. So I'm really excited to see what he's kind of make.
Yeah, it is that kind of thing.
It's an instrument, really.
Yeah, it really is. It's its own unique thing. And I remember, I haven't got one myself. I keep threatening to get one, as I do with so much. But it's just for long flights. I get the train a hell of a lot. And just for something like that, just to be able to sit down, pull it out of your pocket, and literally pull it out of your pocket and kind of start putting stuff together, is just a really cool thing. I also like the idea of being able to tap into the radio.
It is really cool.
That is a really cool thing.
So what about the yellow semi-modular thing?
It's massively weird. So it's quite expensive for what you have, because it's a semi-modular thing. And you know, often when manufacturers go, we're going to make this fully modular but pre-configured system, and they're like, it's going to be this much money, and then it ends up having an oscillator, a filter, an LFO, and like some envelopes, and that's basically it. I'm actually going to look up a picture so I can actually tell you what it actually has, but it's really underpowered for the price you pay. And there's the element of that self-assembly thing, because it's aluminium. I think it's aluminium or maybe even steel that's painted. You have to fold the thing, and if you're careful in things, you can fold it and it's fine. But once you've folded metal, you fold it the other way, it's just going to snap. So if you're not paying attention when you're making it, there's that going on. I know the way they've done their power distribution, it's really difficult to squish all the loose flying cables in the back. You can run it off batteries, but it eats batteries like anything. And they use stereo patch cables for some reason. And it's just odd. I know they also released, there's a little red one, which is a desktop sequencer, kind of a touch plate thing. But I think there's a good Enrique Martinez video that shows the build and then kind of the use of it. And you know the IK Multimedia Uno synth and the Uno drum? Do you know the texture that's on those, the flat? Kind of, they've got this touch plate front, slightly textured, but it's a flat, it's a capacitive thing. That's the kind of surface that you've got on this sequencer thing. But in the video, you see Enrique, like, he presses one of the step buttons, the whole front panel just flexes horribly. And I commented on his video saying, oh man, is there anything you can do to stop that flex? It looks really bad. And I think his reply, the comment, was just like a sad face. Like, no, that's all you can do. So it's the pocket operator, not the pocket operator, is it? Well, PO400, at least. That's the big yellow triangle. It's a very strange form factor just because of the way it's angled. I'm just going to try and get a front-on picture so I can actually tell you what's in the thing. But yeah, on Teenage Engineering's website, £469. You get three oscillators, noise, random, and two envelopes, two VCAs, LFO, filter, mixer, and then there's a speaker. There is, 16-step sequencer in it. But the thing that annoys me about it is it's just the most unremarkable thing I've ever seen. Apart from the weird form factor and, you build it yourself, it's just so boring. Like, there's no weird waveforms. The filter doesn't sound very interesting. It's like there are so many other ways to slice it that aren't annoying to build, that you can transport relatively easily, that have actual knobs rather than these stupid Lego-style pins.
Right.
I appreciate their Lego implementation in other areas, but it doesn't make sense on this one. It makes me angry.
Okay.
This thing, I just don't like it.
Yeah.
Really, really not a big fan of the thing. Anyway, we got sidetracked. That's kind of it for music releases. What are you hunting for there?
I've just remembered, because I was talking about the Teenage Engineering, and I don't know how recent, because there was the new Lifeforms from Pittsburgh Modular as well.
There's a Sonic State video out of the Voltage Research Lab, finally, which I think is an interesting synthesizer.
I don't know, because I've suddenly became, I don't always cotton onto these things as soon as I should do, possibly, but I've only cottoned onto it last week, started watching some of the, it's not a cheap thing at all. It's
the
quite
Voltage Research Lab?
Is
that is pricey.
Yes. Yes. So what is it, about 1,400 or something?
I remember it. I don't remember it being over 1,000, but I remember it being close.
No, I think they've started getting some pricing, and I was quite... When you get the full thing in the L-shaped case, and it was definitely in the sort of £1,400.
Yeah, it was a Kickstarter originally. Oh, man, it is £1,400. You're so right. That's gross.
Yeah, that's quite expensive, isn't
it? It's annoying because I really love the idea of it. This self-contained, quite experimental unit. It's got an interesting keyboard sequencery, controllery doodad down the bottom.
Yeah.
And, well, you're a fan of Pittsburgh, I know, Pete.
Yes.
And, I mean, I really like their approach to things. I just wish it was a bit more accessible.
Well, this one's supposed to be very... the whole premise is very West Coast.
Yes, much more than... I suppose they've done pretty half and half in their previous modules, but... compared to anything similar like the Microvolt, the SV1, that's all fairly normal as far as things go.
Yeah, I mean, most of
them. I would say
exclusively, and I've got quite a bit of their original Eurorack stuff.
The plain silver face with the printed, like, Dymo tape thing on it.
Yeah, and I mean, they're all of it is very conventional synthesis.
Hmm.
But this one, the approach apparently is quite different. I did watch the Sonic State video on it, and as usual, we went into reasonable depth and so forth. It was just the prior. I thought, well, that looks nice. And
it's a really compelling little unit. That's what kind of attracted me to it as well. I've been trying to aim for... I'd like to get absolutely rinse self-contained instruments for the kind of sounds they can produce before... moving on, really.
Yeah, it was just the price that really I gagged on.
Yeah.
I just thought that's quite a big chunk.
I've had dreams of the new Make Noise tape and microsound looping machine, which just looks really nice. You've got their new Mimeophone, you've got a Morphogene, Maths, Wogglebug, and a few other bits in it, and just one of their one-row skiffs. $2,000.
Yeah.
But I want it.
Well, you could build up some of those units, but you could buy them second-hand.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Wobblebug would be no problem. You could always pick those up.
And there's lots of other things based on... Is it Grant Richter who did the original Wogglebug and then licensed the design to make
it? It's a very old... It's a 1970s design. It's a really old... I believe it is. It's got sort of West Coast...
Definitely got West Coast implications.
Lineage. Yeah. You know, because that's all about the weird and randomness of it all.
Yeah. Originally designed by the dude of... Is it Weird or Wired? Weird Synthesizers, apparently. That was the original design way back. But yeah, a really cool random module. Either way, I think it's just... it's tapey, granular-y stuff that I'm craving right now. That's what I want. There's the Instro Arbor that's actually shipping now, which is a 6-buffer granular recording thing. There's a built-in condenser microphone on it, and it's got a really nice LED display. It's got kind of a... along the bottom of the panel, there's, you know, Make Noise have that kind of bit in the panel where the LED shines through instead of just having an LED.
Yeah,
in there.
Sort of kind of glows under the
It's got that. That's like the width of the panel, but in a nice kind of stylized thing. And it must have loads of LEDs behind it because as you scroll through the buffer, it's really quite fine in terms of resolution. You can see where you are in the buffer. It's you got to look it up.
So is it animated? Amazing. In respect, it's moving between.
Yes, so it will, as you modulate the buffer, either by the control or by control voltage, you can see the little light going backwards and forwards. It's pretty cool.
It's nothing like a novel interface or a novel indicator or something like that.
It certainly looks a lot easier to use than Clouds, definitely, but it's not true stereo. You get left and right grains, but it's like mono recording. Either way, Instro is a really cool looking company.
I'm somewhat overwhelmed by the amount of modular manufacturers.
Absolutely.
And the amount of modules on offer now. It's almost become overwhelming. And the constant either refresh of modules or completely new modules and completely new manufacturers. It just seems to be endless now.
Yeah, I suppose if you try and keep with the mainstream ones, then there's less to keep up with. There's some interesting stuff happening at the entry level, like the Dreadbox Chromatic series. That's going to hit certain retailers should be next week. They're due to arrive. I'm excited to see those. They're about £80 each.
And so does the chromatic just refer just the to colours. the colour scheme?
Yeah,
so
but there's one... I mean, there's nothing earth-shattering about them, because it's like there's a delay, there's an oscillator, but like the delay is this cool three-stage thing, kind of like a three-tap. And then the oscillator has a built-in pitch quantizer, which is kind of a cool idea. And I think the other one's sort of a general CV manipulator, but I'm excited to check those out. They should be pretty cool. But yeah, 80 quid a pop. That's pretty good. Yeah.
So are they going for the sort of 2HP market?
Well, in terms of cost, yeah, but they are, I want to say, maybe 8 HP. They're all the same size, about 8 okay. HP, maybe 8 to 10. I'm bad at judging.
That's quite big. I mean,
yeah, so they're definitely more than 6. And six, I mean, is this kind of width.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can obviously hear
about
my gestures.
2 centimetres.
I don't know, man. I'm bad at all
that
this kind of thing.
Roughly 2-3 centimetres. Maybe that's about 3 centimetres wide.
Yeah, you could fit a good bunch of them in the standard dope for 84 HP thing. Like, you could fit the line and then more.
It's certainly very distinctive with the colour scheme.
Yeah, they're sort of like kind of 80s sort of neon in a way. Like, you know, Dreadbox did the... It's not... Is it Hysteria?
The MYX was kind of like in the colour scheme that it used was pretty kind of...
No, well, the NYX is just black and white. It's I think you're thinking of the thing I'm thinking of, which I think is the Hysteria. It's a desktop module that's kind of grey, but then it's got that either teal and the pink,
that's
and it's the spring reverb chorus
delay. Right, the MYX is black and white, you're correct. Yeah. That's it. We're thinking on the same. It's kind of like synthwavey, like... kind of looks like it's crawled out of Miami.
Totally.
Right? I kind of dig that vibe. You'll notice that I am only talking about the aesthetics of the thing. That's where I come into it. Like, everything that you guys have said up till now, I've been listening intently.
Right, I think we're pretty much there.
Maybe that's the place to go. Well, been a fantastic little evening. I'm excited for the next one. I'm hopefully actually going to brew up some topics. I've just got to remember to keep my eyes open. You know,
yeah.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time, most likely on iTunes, but other places too. Have a good one.